What's your Everest? You know, the highest mountain on earth, a metaphor for a goal that is so big that it scares you to even speak it out loud. That goal that takes more than a season, a year, or maybe takes a lifetime to even accomplish. I'm Colleen Rue, the voice of the mountain and your host as we meet inspiring individuals who know what it's like to set big goals and how to accomplish them. Welcome to My Everest, a 29029 podcast. Most 80-year-old men you find sitting comfortably in a recliner surrounded by their grandchildren, telling stories of adventures long past. Jim Fisher is not one of those 80-year-old men. Jim is still adventuring. He's still climbing mountains, and he's still living his life to the fullest, right next to his grandchildren. In 2021, 29029 alumni Chuck Fisher invited his parents to climb with him in Snow Basin that year. Jim and Mary Fisher were 78, almost 79 years old when they pressed that red registration button. Jim was an instant celebrity on the mountain. He was the source of a new kind of inspiration in our community. Jim was almost 80 years old, but Jim was climbing. He didn't complain. He didn't stop. We all watched in awe as he chatted and smiled his way, step after step, up and down those slopes. 2021 Snow Basin was a challenge for many reasons for Jim. And when he left without a red hat, a new fire burned inside of him. He had to come back.
What's frustrating about it is when you're really tired and you think, like, this is ridiculous, why am I still doing it? You actually realize it's doable. If you quit, you are quitting. Now, you may get hurt, and that'll happen to you. You may get sick, that'll happen to you. You may have eaten the wrong thing, that'll happen to you. Your feet might go, you might have an injury. But if the body has held together, you can do it.
In June 2023, at the start of our 29029 event season, we invited Jim to speak to our community on a special Zoom call. Jim's message and motivation are just too good not to share with the world. We hope you are as inspired as we are by Jim Fisher. Mr. Jim Fisher, why don't you give us a little background, who you are? I think we all know how old you are, though, Jim.
Oh, okay. I'm not really that old. I borrowed somebody's ID, which gets me, it gets me better in when you go into age group events. It gets me a better spot. So who am I? So I'm a Canadian from Toronto. And went to University of Toronto. In fact, here's the thing. I used to be a football player. I used to be about 50 or 60 pounds heavier than I am right now. And I'm a Harvard Business School guy and then a consultant and flew around the world and lost all that weight. And then I became a marathon runner. And then I ran a bunch of businesses in the food industry. And then about 25 years ago, I started teaching courses at the University of Toronto School of Management, or Wharton School of Management. And I have been doing that ever since and dropped off all those other things. So that's one side of life. The other side is I'm married with three kids and they're all married and they have produced grandchildren. So that's wonderful too. The only bad thing about that is they're all growing up and passing through. So, which breaks my heart, but.
How old are your grandkids these days?
The oldest one is 22, just graduated from University of Colorado. And the youngest one, okay, so I've got 20, I'll have to do this. I got 22. I've got two girls who are 20 who are going into third year university. And then I got two 18 year olds who are going to start university. So how many of that do me? And then I've got, a 16 year old and a 15 year old and a 14 year old.
There my you go. Gosh.
There's the thing. And what's upsetting to me is, what that means is I've only got three left in the city.
Yeah.
And my whole thing has been, they live close enough, but we have a place in the country. And especially in the winter, everyone was a ski racer. So every weekend the place was full and now it's going to be empty.
Yeah. Well, that's, they're all growing up and what a, I mean, you've been the patriarch of this family and I love how you've done so many different things. You said you were a football player and you did marathon running and things like that. Has fitness always been, and sport always been, a part of your life and your and Mary's life?
Yes. In fact, yeah, I would say, yeah, it has. I just, so I had this habit. I mean, if you've done your thing, I just think of you going to high school or going to university, you went to school and then you went to practice. And on the weekend, you played a game. I mean, that's just how life was. So when school ended, I really missed that. It just felt like something was missing in my life. So I started in, I guess for a while, I played rugby. So that you could do that. I could make that work. And then I started traveling. And so I couldn't do that. But I hated just going and coming back to a hotel and going out to dinner and eating and drinking too much and getting up the next morning and then getting on the goddamn plane and all that stuff. So just for my own mental health, I got into the habit of just bringing my shoes with me. So I just always brought my shoes and shorts with me, no matter where I was, anywhere in the world. And I would try and either do it in the morning before stuff started, or I would do it at the end of the day before, before big dinner. So it just became part of my life, is that I would every day, and then it becomes a bit of an obsession, is you think to yourself every day as you look at, you know, what else is going on, you say, okay, when am I going to get my run in?
Right. Not,
am I going to get, it's when am I going to get the run in? Is it going to be really, really early? Is it going to be late at night? Is it going to be at noon?
It was one of those non-negotiables, right? It was a non-negotiable.
That's a non-negotiable. And the best thing in life was when a meeting was canceled and I would be in my shoes and out the door before the people had hung up the phone, and I would just go do it. So this has just been part of the rhythm of what I've done.
Yeah.
I got into running marathons, just who knows why. Somebody said, why don't you try running a marathon?
Why don't you go 26 miles, Jim? It'll be fun.
it'll be fun. So, I wonder if I can do that. Can you do that? I don't know. So I started running marathons. And then, in fact, the transition of it is I ran a marathon and then I said, I wonder if I could run Boston.
That's what happens with Harvard, the Boston carrot.
The Boston Marathon was going on and I didn't go in it. And I always regretted not going in it. I always said, I should have just gone in it, because in those days you could just go, and even if you ended up walking. So then I had to qualify for Boston. So that means I had to, in those days, I had to do under 3 hours.
Wow.
So then I kind of trained a little harder for it. And so I qualified for Boston, and then I ran Boston, and now I was running like 255-ish marathons. And then my next thought was to say, okay, if you can run 255, I wonder how fast you can run and where's the next stop. So, but here's what happens. I went down, because Boston is in the spring. I went down, I watched the finish of the Toronto Marathon, never seen a marathon run. So I got in the state and they finished in this varsity stadium, which is where I played football. They all came in, and I was looking at the times and I was looking at the people, and at around 2 hours and 50 minutes, I realized I hadn't seen anybody who looks like me.
Right. Cause that's fast. That's a fast marathon. Well,
they're skinny. Skinny. They're mostly small. They're mostly small and they're really thin. I mean, they're really, really, really lean. And there wasn't until about 2 hours and 54, 55 minutes or so, I finally found somebody, said, oh my God, that's a guy who has a body like mine. So what it said to me was, okay, you're never going to be any good. Like, there's certain things you can't change. You can't change your body type. I had got myself down to 180, but I was not going to get myself down to 150. So at that point, I changed my view on life and I got into another thing. So my thing I got into was to say, I'm going to keep running because I liked it and it was good for my mental health. And I am just going to keep myself fit enough that I can always run a marathon.
Right. Whatever. If somebody asked whatever. You to run a marathon, you would always be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me a number. Give me a number. I'm on the start line. So that's what I did. So I did that for a lot of years. So, I mean, that became, and I went to some away, but mostly I would just do the local Toronto Marathon. And my thing would be, I'd get up in the morning while the house was asleep, drive down to the start line, do the race, come back, pick up the car, come home, have lunch, and then play road hockey or in front of the house with the neighborhood kids.
I just love how this was just a part of your life. It was just built into your DNA, and clearly you passed it on to your children as well, because Chuck was the first one that you climbed 29029 with. Did Chuck introduce you to 29029, or was it something, how was that discovered? Because Chuck had climbed with us before you came.
Yes. I was down when he turned 50. He has a place in Montauk. We were down there, and he and I found out that he and his friend were going to do this 29029 thing in Vermont.
Right.
And I said, Chuck, you can't do that. We do these things together. What's the matter?
You're
with
leaving
you?
Me out of this, Chuck.
You're leaving me out. I said, you know, how hard? He said, well, you can do it. So, well, then, okay, then why didn't you tell me? He said, I didn't know if you want to. So there he was. So as soon as I heard about it, I said, okay, next year we're going to do it together.
Yeah.
And
And you guys showed up at the start line in 2021.
Well, we did. Yeah. Then we got COVID out. We lost to COVID and da, 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 da. But then eventually we came to Snow Basin and so
you and Mary came with Chuck to Snow Basin that year.
Yes.
So we can't forget about Mary. Mary's just amazing. She's an amazing woman, and she has climbed many mountains as well. And so it's awesome.
Yeah, we've done a lot of adventures, but Mary is much more measured person than I am. So she is not going to run a marathon. She's a, why would you? But she's active. So, you know, she does yoga, she does fitness, she does a big daily walk. She's all that. She's decided a few years ago, she doesn't like running. But we can go on hiking trips and hike all day and do that. We've done canoe trips and all kinds of stuff. So she is, and she's healthy and all that. She had no interest in climbing 29029, 0.00. And the only reason we got her was because of COVID. We had not seen Chuck for several years.
Right.
So I said, well, I'm going to see Chuck.
And a mom can't, you know, not go. I mean, she can't let you go and see him and not go. I can.
So she had to come.
So Mary had to come.
She came to Salt Lake. She came to Salt Lake with us, and she did exactly what she planned to do. She planned to do two a day.
Yeah.
She got her
four, and she was out there with you guys. But you and Chuck, you know, you climbed a lot together. Tell me kind of how that Snow Basin was when you first got to 29029. I mean, you've done triathlon, you've done marathon, you've played organized sports. What was the sense when you got to 29029? How was it different? How was the training different? What did you think? What was your perception?
It's a really, really, really unusual event. From my point of view, I'll just tell you just on the personal side, I had been hurt. I'd had a running injury. So I would have been a lot fitter at Snow Basin than I was. So I was kind of at a low point in terms of my normal fitness activities. And it was one of those things that I've read somebody's story. He had seems to have something where he could climb a mountain, but he couldn't come down.
Oh, that was Dan Selner with his boots.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. Which means you can't do all that much training.
Yeah.
You know, there's a place you can go where you can go up and then there's a chairlift down, but it's so lame and takes too long. And
right,
you know, so
right.
I didn't. So I came to Snow Basin without any idea of how well I would do. I didn't know. I just started walking up. I didn't even know if I'd be able to walk up. I didn't know how the body would
respond.
Would feel. But it turns out I was injury free and it all worked and all that sort of stuff worked. So that was one thing. Here's why I think it's for people who are listening, this makes a difference. I didn't come with a 29-029 objective in my head.
Okay. Yeah.
I came with, I wonder what I can do objective. And those are really, really, really different. So I had not really done a plan that says, okay, you have to do 13, you have this many hours. So if you do, if these things take 2 hours or if they take 3 hours, how many, 39 is too much, you got to get it down. And doing that whole plan, I didn't really have one of those in my mind.
Do you think that was a positive in that situation with the injury that you were facing? Like, was that a good thing for you? Or was it something that maybe could have worked against you?
No, I think it worked against me.
Yeah.
Because I think what you had to do is you have to come with a plan, but you also have to know that your plan will change. Something right. will happen. So I just think of a plan. So when I went to Whistler, I was just going to do it. I was going to do it, period. And so you can have a plan, you could say, and you can do this now. And I was able to walk up and down hills. And so I had a sense of my speed. I knew how fast I walk up. And I don't mean by that moment when you look at your watch and you're going 3.5 miles an hour. No. Not that one. It's what's the average after stopping to take a picture and take a pee and doing all that stuff up? How fast do you actually walk up?
Right.
And the numbers at Whistler work out pretty well because for me, it was about 2 miles an hour. That's my steady, I can just keep going like that. So that means that it's 4 miles. So that's a 2 hour up. And then there's a transition at the top, at the bottom. You got to say hello to Colleen and she's going to make you feel good and you won't want to leave. And then she makes you leave and all that stuff. So I had a plan. So it basically is sort of, you can think about doing it. You can do 3 hours. So you start at 6 in the morning, by 6 in the evening, you will have 4 done. And then you're going to have to do a night one and then you'll be somewhere and then you'll get up at 6 o'clock next morning and you've only got 5 more to go. And so I have a plan.
So at Whistler, yeah, there was a really plan, but at Snow Basin, you were just like, let's see what can happen. And it didn't end in a red hat.
Yes. Yes. So what you know, though, I mean, what I got to make sure everybody realizes, so your plan won't work out because something will happen. I mean, who knew when we got to Whistler that we'd start in the cold mist that would turn to rain, which would turn to sleet, which would turn to snow, and that by the time you got to the top, all your clothing was inadequate. And you were going to have to go back and find different clothes and come up and do it again. I mean, who knew? So you're not going to be finished at 6 because there's all of this stuff happens in the middle. And so we didn't. We finished 5 at, I don't know, after midnight, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think I had gone to bed. So you were still on the
mountain.
You had
gone. Okay. But before you left, you gave me your light, which was essential.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell everybody, have a good light. And then actually I did the last walk with Katie, which I haven't said. When we did Whistler, it was with my two daughters.
Right.
So when Katie and Amy heard I'd done it with Chuck, they said, okay, next year you do it with us. So it was done. So we were going to do it together. And so I did the last climb up with Katie. And fortunately, on the way down, Chris was in the gondola.
Coach Chris.
Coach Chris.
Yep.
Which everyone should recognize is the coaches on the mountain are fabulous. And it's weird in a way because they can't carry you. Like, come on, how in the hell can a coach be useful on the goddamn mountain when you have to actually put one foot in front of the other? But they do. They have this magical thing. Ashley got me up my last climb. And anyway, so Chris then took a serious, okay, so what was your plan? So I said, this is a plan. We're going to do this. And he says, okay, what's the time now? You've done 5. You're not doing them in 3 hours. You're now doing them in 4 hours. So now we got to go back and think about this again.
We got to replan, so, right?
Yeah, we got to replan. You got to redo it. So I said, okay, all right. So we'll do start at 6, then we'll start at 10, then we'll start at 2. And he says, no, because you'll slow down. You can't do that. 5:30. Start at 5:30.
So you got to get up a little bit earlier. But you were able to get a little rest, but in replanning. Yeah.
You get some rest and all that. And I think at Whistler, the big thing was I had to get back to the hotel and get a hot shower because we were all freezing at that point. Mm-hmm. We were all soaking wet and it gets cold. So we had to redo the plan. And so that was what you have to do. But I think it's really important to have a plan and then realize you're going to have to change it. I mean, you've had gondola closures.
Yeah.
You've had two, right? I know you had one at Snow Basin. You had one at Ida Jackson. Something's going to happen.
There's always something that happens, whether it's your stomach doesn't feel great because of something you ate or you didn't eat, or it's a little hot or it's a little cold. I mean, it is, but I like what you're saying, that we have to go in with a plan that we have purposefully set forward. We kind of know what we're dealing with, but also have the strength, the mental fortitude to be able to let that plan be fluid.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if we get too caught in that plan and we're like, oh, well, I'm out, you know, if you would have thought, oh no, I'm doing, you know, it's taking me too long to do these ascents, I'm not going to be able to do it, then we're working against ourselves. We have to be able to be flexible.
Yeah, you do. But I think having the plan and having the objective clearly where you are now, and it may not work also. I mean, you have to be prepared for that. You're going to have to do what you can do. So when we went to Whistler, and I went with my two daughters, and Chuck was supposed to come and he bailed. So Mary came again.
She did a couple of goes.
When we go and do it as a family, that does not mean we are joined at the hip.
So you didn't go in saying, okay, girls, we have to stay together this time. You have to stay with me or anything like that.
No. We're having the experience together, in that we're all having the experience. But
like that.
Amy, and she also had some of her friends, you walk faster than me. You have to walk at your pace. As it turns out, Katie and I walk at the same pace. So we were able to do quite a few together.
I mean, Jim, what is it about, though, having that family experience? Like you said, we're experiencing the same thing together, maybe not at the same time. But what's the importance of that? Why did you want your family to do that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, everyone's family works in different ways. But I thought about it. It's like a ski trip. When we go on a ski trip, people have different abilities. Some people get to the top and they have already identified where's Corbett's couloir and I'm heading that way. Someone is taking off their skis and they're going to hike up and come down another way. And someone's saying, you know, where's a nice blue cruiser? See at the bottom. And because we've had breakfast together, we've traveled together, and we'll have some runs together. But, you know, even if you go down the same hill, you're making your turns, they're making their turns. You're all kind of doing your own thing, but you're all experiencing the mountain. And so we all have this common experience of this wonderful thing called 29029.
You get to share that together. Like when you sit and you all know and you can draw on your experiences. What was it like that, you know, at Snow Basin, you made 10 ascents at Snow Basin. So you were short 3 ascents there. Coming to Whistler and getting on that, starting that 8th lap, knowing that you were on that final lap, that red hat was just at the top of that 3,900 feet that you had to climb. What was that like for you?
Well, it was kind of interesting because my crew was really, really tired. And for some reason, and anyway, they were all really saying, I've got to go. And I had everything I had was soaking wet and cold. So, okay, I said, you guys go. I'm going to go in and get dry and warm. So I actually went into that little restaurant place down at the bottom.
Where the gear was. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, where the gear thing was. And I took off my top and I had those hot air blowers and I blew it into my shirts. So by the time, I was warm and dry when I started up on the last go. And I felt great. I felt great. I felt as good as I had on the very first one. I had lots of energy. There was not a doubt in my mind that I would get there. And my crew thought that I was not going to make it. They thought they had a big head start and they were going to be far away from me, but I actually caught them by the first aid station. And they were astounded. And then for me, it was just keeping everybody going because I had lots of, and we got Ashley showed up at that point. So we had Ashley to walk with us. And we just went up. And as we went up, we were sort of picking up everybody who was struggling.
Yeah. Just kind of bringing them along with the train to you to the top.
Yep. Said, you're not, you're making it. You're with us.
Well, and that's that community, that community that you built. And I think people would see you out there doing this and you're going and you're on your last lap. And truly, Jim, it's inspiring. There's not a lot of 80-year-old men who are willing to do a challenge like this and to do it with so much grace and humility and energy. And you build that community around you and people are so inspired by that.
I think it's nice if they are, I sort of don't think about, I'm going to do this to inspire.
Sure. People. Sure.
I'm going to do this because this is where I am. And one thing I've thought about this after when I've got this sort of comments about, an 80-year-old and you've done it. I think the fact that I'm 80 and done it, don't let anybody think it's easy. If an 80-year-old can do it, anyone can do it. No, they can't.
Right. Because you are a well-trained man. You have a lot of experience, a lot of mileage on your legs. It's been a lifelong thing for you. So this wasn't like I'm 79 and I've never done anything and I've decided to, try out for this, this thing. And so I think that is really important where you've built a life of fitness. This has been a life of fitness. And now at 80 years old, you're still able to do those things because of the foundation that you built.
Yeah. I'm getting the prize now. I'm getting the prize that I can do it. And I must say, if the people who I would like to inspire would have been a whole bunch of my friends who were better athletes than I was, and we did, played on the football team and did all kinds of stuff. And can't walk 18 holes. And they just kind of, they stayed somewhat active, but they never pushed and they let it go. And, and I wish they could, because for me, it's like, I play tennis. I have trouble getting people to play singles. People my age won't. And people who are younger don't want to play with an old man. So
they don't know Jim Fisher. They just don't want to get beat. That's what it is.
It's a little bit, is a little bit frustrating.
I really like what you're saying about having that foundation and then continuing to trust your body, because as we age, sometimes people get a little afraid of their bodies and afraid of pushing and doing those things. But what happens is our body responds, whether we push it or we don't push it, it's going to respond either way. It's either going to deteriorate or it's going to stay better. And I think that's what you've been doing, is you've constantly looked for those opportunities to push your body so that it can stay better.
Coach Emily, whatever you're doing, you're getting better at it. So
Whatever you're doing, you're getting better at it. I mean, whether you're sitting there on watching TV or whether you're out there playing singles tennis when you're 80, you have a quote, Jim, that really has resonated with a lot of people, that 29 out of 29 is frustratingly doable.
Yes.
Tell us about that quote.
That's the damn thing about it is it's really hard, but in fact, it's doable. Like they found those guys who made this up. I don't know whether they're genius or freaks or what they are, but they
a
really.
A little of both.
a little bit of both. Because I think what they did, I mean, it's somehow this is really is just kind of 36 hours and that much vertical on those kind of slopes. And what's frustrating about it is when you're really tired and you think, like, this is ridiculous, why am I still doing it? You actually realize it's doable. Like, if you quit, you are quitting. Now, you may get hurt, and that'll happen to you. You may get sick, that'll happen to you. You may have eaten the wrong thing, that'll happen to you. Your feet may go, you may have an injury. So I'm not saying, but if the body has held together and none of those untoward things have happened, you can do it. You could always put one foot in front of the other. And if you can put one foot, then you can put the other one. And then if you put the other one, you put the other one. And then all of a sudden, there you go, you've done 10 feet. And then,
yeah.
So it's, God damn it. I mean, if you could come to a point where say, no, this is impossible. I know I can't run a 3-hour marathon anymore. So that is not frustratingly undoable. It's just as undoable, period, the end. But when they set the bar at just this level where you can do it. When I got to the top at 7, there's a whole bunch of people up celebrating. And I sort of faked it, but I made a little thing about being mad at them because I said, you guys, you made this goddamn thing so goddamn frustratingly doable. And now you made, and I'm going to go back.
Now I got to go do it again. I got to go ride that gondola down and get on it.
I have to go up and do it again because I know it's doable. God damn it.
Yeah.
Why don't you make it undoable so I could come to the south top and say, no, I can't possibly do that next one. So I can quit with honor, but you couldn't, you have to do it.
Well, isn't that the mantra of 29029, that keep climbing mantra?
Yes,
that
yes.
If you just keep putting those footsteps together, if you just keep adding one step on another, you will get to the summit.
Yes. Yes, you will.
It may be hard, but you're going to get there.
You're going to get there. But you have to keep putting
the time and effort
in front of the other.
Well, Jim, for somebody who is maybe nervous, because we've got a whole bunch of people here who are still waiting to climb these mountains at 29029. What's a few pieces of advice that you would like to leave with them?
Okay. I'm going to do practical first.
Practical
advice. Practical advice. Think weight. You want to carry the least amount of weight up that mountain that you can. So a simple thing I saw people is water. Water is heavy. You don't need to carry an ounce. You're going to start in the morning, well hydrated, with good nutrition, and then you're going to get to an aid station if you want water. First time up, the aid station is going to be crowded and you'd have to stop there. Say, forget it. You're well hydrated. Go to the next aid station. And then by the time it stretches out, you have water when you need it all the time. Don't carry it. It's
We are very well supported on the mountain.
Well, incredibly well supported. So that's number two. So think weight. Weight also means what you're wearing. Think about your shoes. You want shoes that are durable enough that you're going to get there, but not heavy. So, right. So think about weight. Think about ounces. Like ounces, how many ounces that you're dealing with? Think about anything else that you carry. So I would say you could go up, and I've got my watch. I've got a phone because I want to take photos, really. And then you need a power pack. Because you're going to be out there so long that you're going to have to recharge along the way. So that's what I have. And those are the only three things that I would carry. No extra weight. And think about everything that you wear. You want it to be light. Everything should be light. So weight is the thing. The third thing about weight is how much you're carrying on your body. And for a lot of you, there's time to do something about it. But it's like what you carry on your, what your body is and also what you carry, it's always going to be a trade-off. So don't go out and diet and make yourself weak.
Right.
You know, if you do a whole bunch of dieting, you're going to lose muscle mass as well as fat, and you need all the muscle you got. So, but just be thinking about this between now and the end. If you can lose some pounds without losing any strength, it's a great thing. And it's the same thing with the clothes. You want everything you wear to be light, but you don't want to have left everything behind. So there's my little.
Okay. I like those. Those are good practical things. All right.
So okay. I've got another thing though I want to say to people. What you have to think about is you want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
29 of 29 people put on an incredible experience. And I find it now so interesting, actually thinking back to it. Thursday night is like everyone is just in a trance. Like it's weird. There's noise, but not all that much. People aren't introducing themselves to each other. It's just everyone is in the, oh, shit. Oh, my God.
They're nervous. Yes.
Yeah, totally. So here's what I was thinking about. So, and as you go up, it's kind of the same way. People are so into themselves in their own space, they don't look around. So I would say by your second or third trip up, start to appreciate the volunteers. Every aid station, they're fabulous, fabulous people. About the maybe fifth or sixth time up, look around. You're in the mountains. It's beautiful. Scenery, everything, the trees, the blue sky. Look at the views and appreciate and be grateful. And then about eight or nine or so, start paying attention to the other people climbing. And recognize you're in a really special community and enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a great thing. You'll love it. I wish I could be with you.
There you have it. My Everest, the latest episode of the 29029 podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about 29029 events or read more stories from an incredible community of individuals, you can head over to 29029everesting.com. That's 29029everesting.com. I'm Colleen Rue, the voice of the mountain. Keep climbing. We'll meet you at the next summit.